If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to The Lore Hounds. I'm David, one of the main hosts of The Lore Hounds, and this is a new show for us on our podcast feed called Into the West. And with me today for this podcast and this new venture are two of our longtime active community members, Lisa.
Hi, everyone.
You have a background in stage and are kind of a film buff.
Right.
And you've been on a number of different podcasts with us as well.
Yeah. Alicia and I think are going to be doing quite a few more together. We really enjoyed doing one together. So that was great.
Good. That's great. And it just so happens that your brother, Brian 8063 on the Discord and your Red Zippy, of course. Brian, you are a community member extraordinaire. You are a moderator on our Discord, as well as our editor-in-chief of our community blog, which has an open standard, and just all-around general helpful guy in the community. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You've been on a few podcasts as well yourself.
That's right. I'm the history guy.
Yes, you're the history guy. And speaking of history, the premise or the setup for this new show called Into the West is to reflect and commemorate on and around different filmmakers and actors who have passed into the West. We are hitting a inflection point in generations where a lot of the folks from the golden age of movies and TV to some degree are shuffling off this mortal coil. And for a while, if you're new to the Lorehounds or if you're not a subscriber to the Lorehounds, we have another podcast called 11Zs, and it's our monthly movie club where John, Alicia, and myself, we rotate our months. We pick a theme for movies. We come up with a list of movies. We pick them. Subscribers vote on them. Then we watch that picked movie and discuss it on a podcast. Well, people kept dying. And so we're like, oh, we got to do a retrospective on David Lynch or on Robert Redford or, you know, Diane Keaton.
Yes. Yeah.
And then John commented that the 11Zs podcast was kind of turning into a funeral dirge.
Can't see really, death.
No, you can't. And then it's kind of that podcast is really kind of just a fun subscriber space where John and Alicia and I get to kind of let loose with our film choices a little bit. And it's kind of more personality driven, where this was just, oh man, these things. And both Brian and Lisa, you guys have helped do some filmography reviews that we did. Looking at different film histories for a couple of folks. And it was just kind of a fun, fluky thing. Hey, who was it? Was it Redford that we did?
It was Redford. Kicked off Redford, yeah.
And his filmography was so long, I was like, I can't pick 11 movies out of this on my own.
No. That's not very democratic.
No. So I reached out to you guys and we did this thing where we like talked through the thing. And then we ended up picking the 11. And then John, Alicia, and I picked ours for the podcast. And that was kind of fun. And then we did that for Diane Keaton. And then it just kind of started to become a thing. And then we're chatting on the Discord and people were like, well, is this a podcast now? What do we call it?
Or when are you doing so-and-so? Catherine O'Hara just died. And you're like,
right. Exactly. So it just sort of became a thing. Just how, and it's almost exactly how, it's not dissimilar to how John and I first got started podcasting when we were over in the Bald Move community. And we're like, hey, you want to do something around Tolkien? Yeah, sure. Okay, this is the name and this is our brand identity. And it was just like within a moment, it was just created and it just works. And so that's sometimes how you know that something is in the space. So this is Into the West. So you can, of course, send us feedback. We have a special email for that called intothewest@thelorehounds.com. We have a channel set up for this show on our Discord. And you can go there and you can post remembrances or, you know, if the news breaks about something or some interesting articles, what have you, it's a great place. Or, you know, and talk to us that way. Mm-hmm. If you have comments for us and you want to offer suggestions or ideas, you can post them there. Or feedback for the episode, we'll have that there.
Yeah, tell us your memories. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And we can incorporate those into the show, right? If that seems like it's an appropriate thing. And of course, we're an independent podcast, and so we do subsist on both advertising and subscriber revenue. So if you feel like you want to support the Lorehounds community and to help us keep the lights on and to share the wealth amongst all of the different creators that are in our community, you can go to Patreon or Supercast, and you can subscribe there. We have a ton of affiliates. We sponsor a bunch of other podcasts as well. And in the show notes, there's a link for our link tree that has links for all that stuff. So very easy way to find everything, the Discord, our general email contact, our subscription, things like that. So that is sort of the setup for the show. Brian, I see you had a note in the outline here that you were going to explain a little bit more of that. I apologize.
No problem.
I sort of overran you as the...
No, just it's good.
Doing my hosting duties. So so we're starting this one off with Gene Hackman.
Yes, so, that's right.
Why? So we kind of already did a Gene Hackman a while ago on 11sies. But I'm curious, like, what came up? Why did we want to come back to Gene Hackman? And what was it? Because this is kind of really your guys' podcast. I'm here with you. Creatively, it's going to be driven by you guys. And so Gene Hackman came back because reasons. And yet somehow Gene Hackman returned.
Yeah,
for sorry, sure. That's a Palpatine reference.
Oh, my gosh.
You got to mix our eyes here.
Yeah,
so Lisa, 100%. or do you want to talk? Let's talk a little bit now and then we'll do the biography. But Lisa, what's a little bit about Gene Hackman that compelled you to want to talk about him again?
Well, I think one of the things and one of the reasons I love being a Lorehound is because of the community and being able to really talk and discuss and go down rabbit holes of filmmakers and actors, as we said. And it's especially poignant for my brother and I because, we're brothers and sisters and we grew up together. And so we share a lot of those memories, as you'll hear later. And so Brian and I actually do this when I come down for a visit. Yeah. I mean, we literally have our own little thing. I mean, we may rewatch movies together, you know, or something. Yes. And but
I had no idea about this. So this podcast is like perfect for you guys. This is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this helps us a lot. Yeah,
that's awesome. Awesome. Actually, structures. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go down Star Wars rabbit holes, and oh my god. Anyway, yes. Oof. So, so this is me and Brian in our natural state.
Perfect.
And again, just because it is a communal thing, we're thrilled that we're able to kind of make a podcast out of it.
That's amazing. And what about Gene Hackman?
For me personally, because of the rumors and confusion and controversy surrounding his death, overshadowed a very plain and simple, a great legend has died.
Right.
Yes.
You know, and it was really awkward, you know, for a month, 6 weeks maybe, and it just became TMZ. For me, I feel I haven't really done a proper retrospective.
It. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And I know we're going to have sort of some more moments of reflection later on, but I'm just sort of want to get at the nub of why we're bringing Gene Hackman back up. So Brian, over to you. Same question to you.
Yeah, he's, you know, especially for the two of us, Gene Hackman was an important actor in our movie journey. Mm. And he, you know, I think it's funny because I think, you know, when you think of like Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt, you know, you think, I think when I think of those two, for example, I think of them as a person first. Oh, they were married. Oh, they got divorced. Oh, they look so handsome, you know? And then I think, oh, there's the movies. When I think of Gene Hackman, I think of the characters first and then the person. But as Lisa says, you know, because of his death, which we'll cover in a moment, he just didn't get that, I think, honor that he really should deserve. And I'm glad you guys did it a bit earlier, but we're going to try a different way tonight.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that was a subscriber only thing. And I think both of you, as you're commenting about the fact that we all, the media got more wrapped up in the manner of death and not the fact that he, a great actor has left us.
Yes, absolutely.
And since this is a public facing podcast going out, then this is actually an opportunity for us to honor his legacy and his memory. So I think, as a, even though we've done it before, returning to it, we're kind of doing it freshly from this angle and this aspect.
It's an interesting timestamp too, because a lot of the chatter, you know, the Oscar Awards were just over the weekend, and there was quite a bit of chatter over why Gene Hackman wasn't in the In Memoriam. And so you lose track of time.
Wait, he wasn't.
No.
But was he would have fallen?
He died in February of last year, so he was in the In Memoriam for March ceremony.
Right.
But
last year,
the fact that we were all reacting to, where's Gene Hackman?
Right.
Means that we still haven't processed.
Something is missing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Got it. Okay. Well, it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little reason why kind of helps us there, I think, in orienting. And so I know you've got some biographical notes. We're going to jump on that next. But I am curious, since this is we're getting up to speed with this new thing. What are we looking at for? Let me actually back up a little bit. I want to ask you about what other names we have on the list to go through. But I also wanted to say something about the formatting really quick of this. So the idea is that for each person that we're going to be discussing, we'll do a podcast where we review their career and their filmography. And then we have a voting scheme that we're going to try out, and we'll pick off of a list of a sort of essential filmography. And then you, the listening audience, we'll put a link in the show notes for a voting place, and then you can go vote. And then whatever movie you all pick, we'll then all watch that movie, and then we'll do a deep dive on that movie. We'll get into the behind the scenes. We'll get into the themes and the impact, its legacy, why this movie represents that person's career, and just sort of do a normal Lorehounds nerd out about the film. So that'll be the format. And this isn't going to be on a regular frequency so much, maybe a little bit at the beginning, because we have a couple, I think, names on the list that we want to get to. But this podcast is just going to come out when it comes out. Yes. As you guys, you know, do your research and prepare the episodes, and then we can find a recording schedule, and then we'll get those out. So this will just kind of move along at its own frequency and pace. But we'll expect for every person that we profile, there's going to be two episodes. And then I was thinking too, because sometimes there may be somebody, a producer or maybe a lesser known director, we want to throw in, do a shorter podcast where we bundle up a couple of names. We can do that, or we can fold them in. But like, you know, we'll kind of accordion size our formatting and our frequency based on the needs. But I am curious, just to let folks know ahead of time, who are some other folks that we're going to be profiling in future episodes that have already passed away that we want to get back to.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, we've got Rob Reiner.
Yes. Now Alicia is going to has a Rob Reiner list for our next 11Z's podcast. So, but that's her. That's because she wants to do that. And she's like, you know, super excited. So like, we're not, you know, separating from that, but that is subscriber only. And that is Alicia's list. So, you know, like that's curated for her, you know, for that. And then we'll pick ours. But,
nice.
So for subscribers, if you're interested in that, yeah, do definitely check that out. So anyway, Rob Reiner.
Yep.
And he's got a huge filmography, right? So we got no shortage.
He does. Oof, yeah. We have, Catherine O'Hara.
Yes.
And Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And those are most recent folks who've passed away.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And if there's folks that, you know, if people want to write in or, you know, mention a name on the Discord, we can definitely consider those and see.
Yeah, because, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Brian and I have our own Death Watch. We always have.
Yes.
This is something you had prior to this podcast, right?
Oh, it's
perfect. Yes. You know, it's like, I love he's it. That old?
Yeah, yeah. So we did a whole inventory a few weeks ago about holy cow. Okay. And so, you know, I get excited because, like, you know, Al Pacino is like 83 or 84 and you worry about him. But then I'm like, he was at the Vanity Fair Oscar party. And so, yay, you think he's okay, you know?
Right.
Clint Eastwood, right?
Clint Eastwood. Getting to 100. Yeah. I know. Mel Brooks.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot coming up. So we will keep you posted going forward. Usually, I'm sure when we do the movie review thing, we'll have the next podcast sort of pre-identified rolling forward. But we'll just keep everybody sort of informed so that way they can do their own research and participate in the Discord and the emails and stuff like that. So
Sounds good.
Well, yes. You've got some biographical notes on Gene Hackman. So this is a good time to take a commercial break. We'll do that. And then when we come back, I'll hand it over to you guys for a little bit of a deep dive into Gene Hackman's life.
Yeah.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. To dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself. From building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. And we're back. Okay, Gene Hackman biography. Brian, I think you've got some notes. Why don't you take it away?
I do. Thank you so much. So Hackman was born in 1930 rose from a tough Depression-era childhood, did a stint in the Marine Corps. This was after World War II. He was too young to serve in the war, and became one of America's most respected actors. Interesting enough, he was even voted least likely to succeed at drama school. It's the quiet ones, right, that you got to watch out for. Coming from the theater, Hackman broke through with his Oscar-nominated role in Bonnie and Clyde, then exploded into stardom as a gritty New York cop, Popeye Doyle in The French Connection, right? Another famous one, a role that actually won his first Academy Award. And then over the next three decades, he became this go-to actor for like complex, conflicted characters in films like The Conversation, Hoosiers, Crimson Tide, Royal Tenenbaums, and of course, The Unforgiven, which earned him a second Oscar. But interesting enough, in the 2000s, and I didn't know this until recently, he stepped away from Hollywood and reinvented himself as a novelist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No idea.
I had to go back and figure out what he wrote. So he wrote like a thriller.
Okay.
A Western. Cool. And some kind of 19th century pirate seafaring novel. Okay. He co-wrote that one.
Ahoy.
So it's like, okay, I may have to put this on my to-be-read pile here.
Wow.
So he became a novelist, but his body of work still stands as a masterclass in screen acting, and his influence can be felt in nearly every serious character performance that followed. And Lisa, what was he like on set?
Gene Hackman definitely had a reputation as a brilliant but demanding presence on set. He loved acting itself, but he often disliked the machinery around it, long hours and hair and makeup and the studio politics and what he saw was like unnecessary film industry best practices and rituals.
Rituals, I would say, is the operative word there.
Yes.
Right.
So directors like Barry Sonnenfeld and John Moore say that Hackman always arrived prepared, and he was fiercely protective of his characters. On some films, he would like literally cut script pages apart to remove line readings and emotional directions, like his voice begins to quiver. Crack. Nope, cut that out, insisting that these choices belong to the actor and not to the writer.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that intensity obviously could cause a little friction. On Get Shorty, Sonnenfeld recalled Hackman clashing with co-star John Travolta over preparation and being ready at the go. Hackman knew his lines, cold, and he really had little patience for what he saw as a more casual approach from his fellow actors. Bill Murray also had said that on the Royal Tenenbaums, Hackman could be really tough on director Wes Anderson, especially early in the shoot. It was one of Wes's very first movies. But even those who experienced that side of Gene Hackman say that his performances were extraordinary and that his toughness, his dedication came from like really high standards and not his ego. And he also stood by his principles. I mean, during Superman 2, he was Lex Luthor. He refused to return after director Richard Donner was fired. And so the production had to finish with some scenes with a double.
Oh, wow.
A little voiceover.
Dang.
Which, Brian, I'll bring up later. I just learned.
Okay.
By the end of his career, as Brian said, you know, the business side of filmmaking was just too stressful. So, he really just is known for embodying New Hollywood's double edge, which I know you'll talk about, Brian. It's just an uncompromising artistry that produced some of the era's greatest performances and a working style that could be as volatile and electrifying as the films themselves. So, Brian, what do I mean by New Hollywood?
Yeah, you know, we dive deep as lorehounds, so I was interested in this idea of New Hollywood because especially this is not going to be the last time that we're going to be talking about New Hollywood, right? Al Pacino. We've talked a little bit with Diane Keaton. You know, there's this whole generation of New Hollywood. And what is it? Well, so in the late 20s and through the early 60s, the studios operated a rigid system in which the studios themselves controlled all the filmmaking. So the scripts to the stars. So actually the directors and the writers were totally under the low totem pole. They were thrown in, they were thrown out. They didn't like it. They were interchangeable. And it produced kind of like polished commercial safe films bound by the conservative. Yeah, exactly. Conservative Hays Code, which I will bring up later in our filmography. So we'll put a pin in the Hays Code. But by the late 60s, the collapse of the system, the elimination of the Hays Codes with the new film ratings, you know, the rated R, PG, etc., combined with the influence of European art cinema and a younger counterculture audience gave rise to New Hollywood. So these are the filmmakers like Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese, Robert Altman. They seize control creatively and explore the character-driven, right, the darker stories that broke taboos for violence, language, nudity, themes. So you move from this glossy, controlled spectacle to raw, direct, director-driven cinema that changed how audiences related to the movies. Compared to classical Hollywood, with some exceptions, of course. I'm kind of doing a broad brush, but we could talk even more tonight about classic Hollywood and the film noir, blah, blah, blah. But his place in New Hollywood is crucial to understanding this whole dynamic, because New Hollywood, you know, praised realism, regular-looking people, right? Moral murkiness, character. And Hackman was one of its defining faces through the films that we're going to talk about tonight.
The French Connection. I'm just thinking of how that overturned the police mythology.
Oh, my
gosh. From the cops as being the good guys to them being morally questionable. The city is dirty, dangerous. The cops are just as dangerous as any criminal that's out there.
Which broke the Hays Code.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So
exactly.
And Hackman's right in there on overturning the standardized forms.
Yeah.
Norms. Exactly.
The norms. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There was a moral code that you had to follow as a film, and those broke loose.
Yeah.
And Hackman was right in the middle of all that, which is pretty exciting. Yeah. So you had a generation that, you know, characters sounded like real people and they're not manufactured stars, they're grounded. And that's what Hackman's all about. And Lise, what can we say about his passing into the West?
Gene Hackman and his wife, Betsy Arakawa, were found dead in their Santa Fe home in February of 2025. It was found they died a week apart of unrelated natural causes, but because their bodies weren't discovered for several days, there was speculation that ranged from foul play to poisoning or even like a gas leak. And so that really got caught up in all of that. But it takes time to do autopsies and toxicology. And those reports found no carbon monoxide, no signs of trauma. And investigators ultimately ruled both deaths were natural. So, but there was just weeks and weeks of, and even their pet dogs, there was one that was outside, but one that was inside. And anyway, we won't go there.
Wow.
Wasn't it the case that she passed away from hantavirus and then he passed away because he had Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or something?
He died from Alzheimer's related dementia. And he really couldn't take care of himself very much.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She was the one that passed first from a disease that humans can get from like rat droppings and things like that. So, So she died from a very serious infection. And Hackman.
Right. And she was his full-time caretaker. They lived very remotely and isolated.
Right. And one is really checking in on them regularly.
Right. And then he's just left alone.
I think New Mexico.
New Mexico, Santa Fe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was just left alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
in a dementia state.
Right. With his wife dead in the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's just
breaks
terrible.
Your heart, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
That such an august, you know, personality.
Yeah.
But it just shows you our mortality.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know, I subscribe to the Washington Post and I always read the obituaries, especially for the big names and everything. And when I read about like anyone from the big actors, B list and A list and B list, you see a lot of them like they died at a home. You know, right.
Surrounded by their family.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's just we're all human, even at the very end. And I was joking. Well, you know, death is not a joke, but you know, Into the West. For those who are not Tolkien folks, that is the process where elves go from Middle Earth into magical ships and head west to Valinor.
And I'm glad you brought this up. I forgot to say anything about Into the West.
Exactly. So that you see this in the Jackson movies, you see this in the Rings of Power. They are going beyond this world into their paradise.
Passing the veil.
Yeah. Exactly. And
maybe we'll have Marilyn on one day to talk about the mythology of Into the West.
That would be wonderful. Exactly. And so I was telling Lisa, it's like I'd rather be an elf on a ship heading to Valinor than what Gene and his wife suffered through. Yeah. It's rough.
Yeah. And there's a strange echo here with one of Hackman's earliest roles in I Never Sang for My Father. Hackman plays a man struggling with his aging father.
Interesting.
Yes. So it's a difficult relationship in that movie that ends with the father dying alone and neglected.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I thought the exact same thing when I saw this movie. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's art imitating life.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's super interesting. I knew that he had a brief military career.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that he was this was his job. He was an actor and he was going to do it. and I didn't realize to the extent to which his, that personality, I guess, you know, we can talk about our sort of moments of reflection about, you know, who this person was for us.
Mm-hmm.
I have a relative that reminds me of Gene Hackman in a lot of ways, generationally and sort of physically, you know, and in some of that attitude of young people or people who grew up in that era and that time. There's a kind of toughness. There's kind of an inner strength that I think probably, you know, comes after, you know, the war, you know, World War II. And part of that culture that comes out of that, because obviously he was too young to fight in that.
Yeah.
And there's always an intense, he always is on screen in my mind with a kind of intensity and a kind of a hardness to him. And then when you see him break on screen or that his role is a little bit different, you know, thinking of Tannenbaum's.
Yes.
That you're like, wow, this guy can really act. He had a kind of type of character that he would play, but he played the characters. He was not a movie star. He wasn't a face. And so, I think one of his, we'll talk about films, specific films later, but I remember a movie Heist. I happened to just see randomly one time. Yes. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. He's so good in Heist. And obviously, what's the one with Enemy of the State, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always a good one. But then you forget about things like Mississippi Burning and Hoosiers. We're going to talk about all these in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you even get even deeper into his filmography and he's got some really great roles. So, I don't remember a time when Gene Hackman wasn't on the screen for me. I don't remember his, I remember his going, but I don't ever remember his coming because he was just one of the fixtures of movies that I would grow up with. And I can't say enough about him, you know, to esteem him anymore. Then, you know, he was just a really great actor. He did his job and he brought everything he had to his roles. So Super cool.
Yeah, I mean, he had 79 feature films.
Yeah.
And I'm like scrolling down the list here, and it's like, that is not 79 films. I don't know how you
know. No, it's not. We decided.
You had fun tearing this down.
We'd be here all night.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and the fact that it's such a lengthy, like many of these folks will talk about on our podcast, but, you know, we're going to talk about a handful of essentials, but there are 79, and I've heard from, you know, friends and others that, and we hope to hear from the community as well. You know, what were your favorites? And there's a lot to choose from.
Right.
So. Yes. Absolutely.
Brian, some reflections from you?
Yeah. So my first exposure to Gene Hackman was Lex Luthor and Superman, but I'm going to give that story over to Lisa a little later to explain.
a little inside the family.
A little inside. Exactly.
A little family thing there. A little family thing. The big role I remember him is in Hoosiers. I love sports movies, and he was just such a pillar of character in that movie. And even then, I must have been probably in my 20s, and because he wasn't this huge movie star, I was still a little perplexed by who Gene Hackman is. Hmm. And there he was in this Hoosiers basketball, high school basketball film. And he was just amazing. And then came Mississippi Burning, and then Unforgiven, my other favorite movies of his. And he's just truly just blends into a film. And he's just so, you know, as I mentioned, you think about his movies first, his roles first, and not the person. And that tells you something, right? It's character-driven, anti-hero, no superstar looks, coming from the stage and television, which is also huge of this generation, right? They cut their teeth on other mediums, not straight into movies. Hmm. So he's just special.
Right.
Yeah. He is one of kind.
Lisa?
So for me and Brian and our family history, our parents were divorced, and we lived with our father when our parents split up. And our father had, he was the youngest of three. And so we were very close to our uncles, Uncle Bill and Uncle John and Dad. Yes. You know, the brothers thrice, as we would call them. And one thing that Uncle Bill and our dad and the two of us just were fanatical about were films. Back in the day, you know, we loved Raiders of the Lost Ark so much that I think we saw it like 14 times in the theater. Like anytime someone
in
said.
In the theater, not on
in the theater.
Yes.
Not streaming. Yes.
Literally 14 times.
Literally. And Uncle Bill would go with us if we were like taking a friend. Oh my God, you haven't seen Raiders, you know. Anyway, so our Uncle Bill.
The Harrison Ford episode
gonna
is going to be rough.
It's going to be so awful.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have a lot of guests for that one.
So our Uncle Bill, and he had a great sense of humor. And so 1980, when Superman 2 came out with Christopher Reeve, you know, he Gene Hackman is playing Lex Luthor. And there's a scene where Lex Luthor discovers where the kryptonite is and where Superman's home is up in the Arctic. Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes. I'm going to have to get used to that. Yes.
Then people on the internet yell at you for spoiling a 30, 40-year-old movie. You're like, what? Come on.
Oh, my God. Do you not know kryptonite kills Superman? Anyway, Gene Hackman and his right-hand woman, Miss Tessmacher, you know, go to the Arctic, and they're in this like dog sled or whatever, and they're trying to figure out where to go to find Superman's home. And so she's, you know, upset with this and asking questions, and he just simply says, "North, Miss Tessmacher, north." It was
in that
delivered
Gene Hackman voice.
In that Gene Hackman voice, and you're just, and it was like this wide shot, and these little people in the snow, and it's just north, Miss Tessmacher, north. And so that became a catchphrase in our family, where anytime we were in the car together, and this, like, literally, probably until he died, in, you know, in the you know, anytime we weren't sure where we were going or getting lost, Uncle Bill or one of us would say, north, Miss Tessbacher, north.
North.
Love it. I mean, so we're talking like decades.
Yeah.
That's our catchphrase. If we just didn't know where we were going as a family, it was always north.
Like, I haven't seen that movie in so long, but I can hear his delivery of that clearly in my head, because it's just going to be flat as concrete, smooth as concrete.
Matter of fact, north, Miss Tessbacher, north.
North, Miss Tessbacher, north.
Why would it be any other direction?
Right. That's right.
So, you know, so that's for that personally. So again, that's really our first time we saw him. So we loved him as Lex Luthor in our family. Yeah. So, but for me, kind of what we talked about is that, you know, the fact that he isn't a movie star, you know, like Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise, but the, you know, actor's actor, character actor. And I do love him when he is hysterical. He is funny in Superman and Superman 2. Birdcage, hysterical. Royal Tenenbaums, fabulous. You know, it's fantastic.
He's playing so against type in Tenenbaums as well.
And you're like, Gene Hackman funny? No, but yes. You know, so those really stood out for me. And then I have really non-traditional favorites because he plays moral ambiguity and it has a quiet menace where he really weaponizes his own intelligence. So No Way Out with Kevin Costner.
It's an interesting way of phrasing that.
So in No Way Out with Kevin Costner, he plays the Secretary of Defense. In The Firm with Tom Cruise, he's the mentor lawyer who...
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then Runaway Jury is one of my favorites. One of his... next to last films where, again, he's, you know, spoilers, he's not a moral man. He's not a moral lawyer in this trial. And he's in it with Dustin Hoffman, which was a big deal.
Yes.
Because the two of them are from that generation and they actually realized that they had not written a scene of the two of them together. So they had to go back, write a scene, bring the actors in. Because you can't have Gene Hackman and Dustin Hoffman in a movie together. We've had Gene Hackman and Clint Eastwood. We had Gene Hackman and Al Pacino. Anyway, and then Crimson Tide with the great Denzel Washington. Oh, God, that's going to be another one.
Two shouty guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, and shouting at each other in a small metal tube.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's really where Hackman stands out for me.
Got it. Okay, cool. So let's take another quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to run through your essentials list. And then we're going to pick several films. And then we'll set those up to be voted on. But we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's start talking about Gene Hackman's essential filmography, because we're not going to do a full podcast of all 79, was it?
79.
That he was on? We don't even have his stage list here.
Right.
And I don't know that we saw him very much on the small screen.
I don't think so.
Yeah. And I think speaking to just, you know, again, we're kind of getting the shape of this podcast and seeing what we're going to cover. I don't think we're limiting ourselves only to the silver screen. I think we could go to the small TV screen as well. If there are people that we really want to talk about or people out there in the audience want us to talk about. So
I agree.
All right. So how do you guys, I'm turning it over to you. How do you guys want to run his filmography?
So we have the first 1967 Bonnie and Clyde playing a supporting character is the Buck Barrow, which is Clyde's older brother. And a pair of bank robbers cut a violent swath across Depression era America, dragging along Clyde's reckless brother and his wife toward an explosive end. And this is where he got an Oscar for nomination for supporting actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we know who won the who he beat or who was beaten by in that one? Maybe Lisa can look it up really quick while we And this is the movie that sort of got him off stage and onto screen, right?
Yeah. So he worked with Warren Beatty worked with Hackman in the previous film together, Lilith, in 1964.
Okay.
And Warren Beatty really thought, this is a good actor. I want to kind of remember him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he brought him on board for Bonnie and Clyde.
Cool. Yeah. Was it, what is it? Whose song is that? Somebody has a famous song that they would never say. It was a woman singer about, oh, You're So Vain. Yes. Wasn't it about Warren Beatty?
Carly Simon.
Oh, was it Carly Simon?
Carly Simon, yes.
Yeah, she wrote about Warren Beatty. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so it was Warren Beatty, so I was right. I couldn't remember, because I think she revealed it finally, right?
Yeah, she did. Took a long time, but yeah. But no, he lost to George Kennedy and Cool Hand Luke.
Okay. You know, that's
a good one, worthy one.
Yeah, yeah, that's tough. A really good one, yeah.
Did you guys both watch the Oscars the other night, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. I did not.
Okay. Yeah, Lisa, what did you think of this year's Oscars?
I thought they were...
Of course you were there, because you were posting on the Discord.
Of course,
I was doing all the fashion photos for
us. So,
I have to say, that was the fun part of this year's Oscar watch, because the Oscars this year, on televised-wise, it was fine. It was good. Everything was great. What was fun was chatting with everybody real-time in the Discord while we were all watching.
Yeah, 100%. And I learned that I would kind of put my hand over my laptop screen because, you know, how each of us can even just be a couple of seconds off,
right?
You know, and so especially
I think Jessica
the best,
was like running ahead.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want to know. I was thrilled. You know, I was telling Brian, I really felt quite emotional, more than I thought I would be, because Paul Thomas Anderson, oh my God. I mean, he's like my generation, starting with, for me, for Boogie Nights. I went back and, you know, saw Heart 8 later. But so I was really surprised to find myself so moved and thrilled and happy that the Paul Thomas Anderson, who's just an incredible filmmaker, is finally getting his kudos. I enjoyed it very much.
Good. All right. So maybe we could just go back and forth if you guys want to do that or how you want to pick your films. Yeah. I don't know.
So, Brian, why don't you dive into the 70s, and those that have who are subscribers and listen to it, Brian and I kind of split things so that we both don't watch the same film unless it's a favorite. So I'm going to let my brother.
So you guys are doing pre-research before you did this list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Any reason to rewatch films.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You guys are so hardcore.
So we've split up.
You define you are the Venn diagram of what a lorehound is. So
that's right.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Brian caught more of the first couple films you want to talk about.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Bonnie and Clyde, I've seen. I don't know, Lisa, if you've seen it in this round. Yeah. Which is his classic. Definitely, I think, would be on our list. He has this accent, which is pretty good, but he definitely, you know, holds his own. When we get to 1970, this one I've never heard of until we started doing this, and this was I never sang for my father. So he plays the lead. A middle-aged son struggles to break free from his domineering father while confronting guilt, resentment, and unspoken love. And he also, again, was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Not too shabby. Comes out of the gate. Two films.
I know, right? He did have a few minor movies. He worked with, I think, what was it, Robert Redford as the coach of the ski team.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But
Downhill
Downhill Racer, yeah, which it's like, eh. It's just like he plays this kind of honorary coach, but nothing meaningful, you know? But this was a play, right, from 1968, academic writer moving to California. He meets a girlfriend. He wants to move out there and marry her. But his father is ill. His sister is estranged. It's just, I was surprised and pleasantly so for this movie. Hmm. It seems to hold up because, you know, kind of has that Marvin's Room vibe that we talked about, the three of us, for Diane Keaton. Same kind of themes of taking care of your family who are ill. And he is really just sorting it out. He doesn't want to stay and help his dad. He wants to go to California and live his life, right?
This is such a kind of a new Hollywood-y film, yeah. right? You know, yeah. where's the deference for the older generation and, and familial responsibilities? Go out to California, get away from the East Coast, right. you know, where it's sunshiny. Yeah. I mean, just like we had in Annie Hall, right? Yeah. With Annie going, she was like, I'm out of here. Like once she had a taste of California life, she was done.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. That's a really interesting film in terms of the film period, as well as Hackman's personal life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. It's not a popular, you know, way to behave as it was mm-hmm. in decades past about how one should treat your elders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's and it's right. part of that turning over of the new Hollywood, turning over societal norms.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Through storytelling on screen.
That's right. That's yep. right.
Which is a great yeah. segue into Brian, the French Connection.
Oh, yes. So this is a classic 1971 detective Popeye Doyle, a relentless New York narcotics cop, hunts a heroin smuggling ring with brutal obsessive intensity. And he won Best Actor for this. He also was won in the BAFTA Award for Best okay. Actor. And this movie goes back to David was saying about the Hays Code, right? And same thing with Bonnie and Clyde, where you had two things I want to come out with. One, you mentioned about authority figures like police and judges had to be portrayed with respect.
Right.
And when you watch French the good Connection, guys. Yeah, you see Popeye Doyle wearing a Santa suit, wailing on a suspect. You know, you aren't going to see Elliot Ness
no.
do this. It's just right. not going to happen, right? But in this movie, it does. and crime could never be shown to pay. Villains had to be punished. And that also was thrown the window in this movie. So you're already breaking old customs once again with New Hollywood for this movie. And the New York City was the character, you know, Brooklyn, gritty, the street detective, and the famous car chase also right. was known for this. So,
For the subscribers, we covered this. This is what got voted on by the subscribers. So we did discuss it on Patreon.
Okay, so. Cool. Good to know. Yeah. So that's an important role there. We have the Poseidon Adventure, 1972, lead ensemble, Reverend Frank Scott. After a luxury liner capsizes, a maverick priest leads survivors in a desperate climb to safety. I've seen this movie a few times, actually. It's one of those kind of fun disaster movies. And it's kind of unusual that you have an ocean liner. To climb disaster movies. Where an actual liner flips upside down. You know, it's like, wow, I didn't think of that. So,
and this was in an era of disaster movies where industrialization and modern life, filmmakers were starting to explore the horror of these contraptions that we had started to entrap ourselves into. And Airplane and Towering Inferno and Poseidon Adventure were all of a piece.
That's right.
And I forget that he was in a lead role in this. I didn't.
He was part of the lead ensemble. And he played a priest who wasn't the kind of priest that's like, let's all have a prayer group together as we all sink to the bottom of the ocean. I mean, he's just like, y'all aren't doing anything. I'm taking over. I'm getting us out of here. And again, he wouldn't even, Gene Hackman doesn't play a priest the way priests have been played.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
The next on our list is Scarecrow in 1973, mm-hmm. where he was a co-lead with Al Pacino.
Interesting.
And yes. And so I saw this for the first time as part of our research for this podcast. Holy cow, is that fantastic. I mean, to have Gene Hackman and Al Pacino, I think he did this, Pacino right did this after, right after The Godfather.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and you know, Gene Hackman's already won a couple Oscars already. You know, I mean, it's just like, wow, I could have watched them forever. It really was amazing. And again, these are, you know, ex-cons. They both got out of prison. You know, what are they going to do with their future? And, you know, and it's definitely one of those buddy, I don't want to say buddy road trip, but it's the two of them getting from place to place to place. They have a destination in mind and what they want to do, but they create a lot of chaos and lose their temper quite a bit along the way. So it was
interesting. I just watched Midnight Cowboy,
which I've
never seen before. And it was a reference for Wonder Man, which is a Marvel television show, which if you haven't watched it, I think for me right now, it's sitting either at my number one or number two show for this year so far. And it's definitely going to end up in the top five. It's that good. And it's not at all what you think it is. But they use Midnight Cowboy as a reference in that. And I'm looking at the Scarecrow stuff here. I'm like, is this only what, three, four years after Midnight Cowboy?
Yeah.
Which had Dustin Hoffman and John Voight. Mm-hmm. And here we have, you know,
Gene Hackman and
Pacino, right?
Yeah.
Pacino and Hoffman, right? You know, I wonder, it'd be interesting as a double feature, those two movies.
For sure.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So that was in 1973. And then the last essential that Brian and I have on our list is The Conversation.
For the 70s.
For the 70s. For the Thank 70s, you yes. For clarifying, yes. 1974, he played the lead as Harry Cowell as a paranoid surveillance expert who fears his recording has put a couple's lives in danger and he unravels under the guilt. So this is definitely a classic of his. He was nominated for a BAFTA, but that was his only nomination, you know, in terms of the top acting.
This is one of the films that I'm more interested in picking when we did our previous Hackman run.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I picked this one or not. I don't remember what got voted on, but this one was still sticking, what was rattling around in my brain afterwards.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It still holds up.
It very much holds up because it's almost like a little mystery kind of thing. It's like, again, that moral ambiguity. Really? Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Who's the one doing this? Okay. And so it's really terrific, but it is. He really just breaks down at the end. And Brian and I realized too that Robert Duvall had an uncredited part in this movie as we were thinking about our Gene Hackman connections to things. Actually did a film with Robert Duvall.
Robert Duvall. That's right.
Warren Beatty.
Yep. Same scene. Boom. Right there.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah.
So that covers the 70s. And
all
Brian,
right. So now we're
into the 80s. Why don't you kick off. Okay.
So the 80s essentials. 1986, we've got Hoosiers. Coach Norman Dale, a disgraced coach, gets one last chance leading a tiny Indiana high school basketball team on a miraculous run. And no Oscar BAFTA acting nominations for this, but it's considered one of his signature roles. It's one of my favorites, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. It's just, it's a great period piece. It's very interesting how, like, I think it was like 1950s, I think. Mm-hmm. Indiana, as those who live in Indiana, basketball runs in their blood.
Basketball is a religion.
Yep. Yep. It is. It is. And he just really, sits well into the space and also lets his co-star shine as well.
Right. He's got Dennis Hopper interest. In that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Hershey.
Yeah. Barbara Hershey, his love interest. Yep.
Cool. Interesting.
Yeah, I love interest.
I know.
I remember this coming out and I have no idea. I have no recollection if I've seen it or not, but I know it's one of his, like, I know the movie, I know it exists. I know that he's in it. And I have no recollection if I've seen it or not. So
that's right.
We'll have to see. What's next?
Next is in 1987. He was a key supporting role in the movie No Way Out,
I remember
which
this
starred
movie.
Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
definitely don't want to spoil this for anyone who might watch the movie, but he plays David Bryce, who is a very powerful defense secretary who frames a phantom Soviet spy for murder, only to find his own protege is closing in on him. And he, again, he's actually a little more moral in this one than some of the other characters.
Yes. Well, we can't say too much about this because it just really depends on the twist.
But, you know, but again, it's seeing Gene Hackman as, you know, Secretary of Defense and, you know, having a lot of power in Washington in the 80s. And so he's very, you know, yep, doing it my way. This is what we're doing. But, you know, when something goes way off the tracks, he really struggles with it. So for sure.
Yes. He's got a stacked cast too. It's got Kevin Costner, Sean Young, Will Patton, Fred Thompson. is that Iman is even in this for a minute?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I recently rewatched that.
Does it hold up?
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
Young Kevin Costner, looking hot.
Yeah, very thin Kevin Costner in that one, yeah. So anyway, but you know, there's a love interest for Gene Hackman there. And one of the things that Brian and I were kind of, well, maybe I am, being the rom-com freak that I am, but, you know, there's not a lot of romantic roles for Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman's true.
You know, may, and if he is, like in the conversation, he did have a love interest, but I mean, she was just like, oh, please pay attention to me, please. And he's like, he just doesn't trust anyone. And I was wondering, I told Brian, I couldn't remember if he had any sort of romantic or intimate moments with Sean. I'm blanking. What's her name?
Sean Young.
Yeah.
You know, because they're having an affair. That's right in the start of the movie.
Yeah, it's part of the premise of the movie.
And he like barely touches her in terms of in a loving way. You know, so it has been interesting. So Brian and I were also kind of tracking, does he play romantic roles? And that's kind of, you know, a good segue, Brian, into the next one. But No Way Out, it's just one of like my all-time favorite movies. And Gene Hackman happens to be in it. So.
Cool.
Yeah, so we have 1988, Mississippi Burning. This is the ex-small town sheriff he plays, Agent Rupert Anderson. He turned FBI agent, probes the murder of civil rights workers in the racist Deep South. And he was nominated for Best Oscar for Best Actor and a BAFTA Best Actor nomination. And this was, I remember seeing it in the theaters, was hugely popular, very much, you know, the critical acclaim. This is also, I think, one of my personal favorites and a very strong movie. My family and I watched it not that long ago, actually, before doing this podcast, because it's just one on the shelf that we just always go back to.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it holds up from a story standpoint, especially around difficult history and sort of
It does. Yeah, and it's interesting because thanks to this podcast, I made a connection. He plays a little like Popeye Doyle, this angry, kind of tough small town sheriff turned FBI agent. So there's there's a connection there, you know, colonel between these two characters. But you know, he plays that very well.
Cool.
Yeah. And he co-stars with Willem Dafoe. That's going to be another tough one day.
Yeah. Another young Will. Yeah. That's going to be a tough one.
But, he's lower on another, our watch list. But
And he's and more of the straight by the book.
By the book, by the rules.
FBI agent.
Yeah. And then Frances McDormand is.
Oh, I can't believe that Frances McDormand.
Yeah. When we first start seeing Frances McDormand. And she's an abused wife, I think, of one of the Klan members.
We have to play 7 Degrees of Brad Dourif because he keeps coming up with the pit. And I don't know if you've seen the chatter on the Discord about this and, you know, Worm Tongue and the pit and then these other things. We're like, wait a minute, this guy's in everything. 7 Degrees game for him.
So. That's right.
For sure.
Then I see you have Bat 21 here, 1988. And this is a movie that I had forgotten about until I just saw it here on this list. You want to tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, that's Lieutenant. He plays Lieutenant Colonel Isiel Hambleton. He's a lead. A downed Air Force officer uses coded golf references to guide rescuers while invading enemy forces in Vietnam. No nominations, of course, but... yeah, it's a different film. I did not catch this for our podcast though, so it would I'd have to take a look at that one. I'm not as familiar with that.
Well, this
one.
Is in the post Vietnam era when a lot of films about that telling experiences platoon of the soldiers, platoon and all that. Yeah. And this has Danny Glover. He co-stars Danny Glover. Mm-hmm. Danny Glover is the pilot that is circling around trying to get him rescued, and Hackman is on the ground running away from enemy soldiers.
Yeah.
And I remember having a good, I remember seeing this when I was a kid because I was all into this stuff at that time. but I have completely blanked it until I'm like watching on IMDb right now, the little clip trailer thing going, wow, man, this movie does not visually hold up.
Oops.
It looks pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But Glover and Hackman, you know, right. There's something there.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's up with 1989's movie here, The Package?
Plays a lead here, Sergeant Johnny Gallagher, an Army sergeant escorting a prisoner, and covers a high-level plot to assassinate a world leader.
I do not remember this movie at all.
I don't either.
No,
I haven't. Yeah.
How did this make it on the list?
It did. It's considered.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah. I think as we think about it, some of these great actors, you got to connect with them and then talk about it a little bit anyway. Acknowledge it, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep. But that was the 80s for him. So I would say probably Hoosiers and Mississippi Burning are probably the ones that we think about. And then we head into the 90s. And Brian, I'm going to launch off with, for the record, listeners, in terms of Brian and I splitting these things, he will watch Westerns and war films. but I did revisit, and what we're talking about is Unforgiven.
Oh, you watched a Western?
I did.
Wow.
And I was like, please. Bravo. I mean, it was so highly lauded, got so many Oscars, Best Picture, Best Director for Clint Eastwood. And so I'm like, for this podcast, I'm going to revisit it. And then I texted my brother and I said, yeah, no, I still don't like it. It's just not my jam. So I will let my brother talk more about it because it is. It's a great film.
Yeah, he plays, you know, he won an Oscar for this. He plays the villain, and he is a bad cop. Yeah, he's mean, he's cruel, but he also could be nice, right? And he's a little off-putting that way. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll let you cross, I'll help you across the street, and I'll just push another guy down into the ground and shoot you. You know, that guy, it's just like, wow. That kind of character. And he's just a great foil for Clint Eastwood's character. You know, they're both struggling, you know, I think in some ways, Hackman's role here, he wanted to live in peace. He wanted to move the past away, you know, take the past behind him.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood's like, that's
bad. Clint Eastwood's the same thing, and you can't escape their past. And they are caught up with that and struggle with that. And of course, you know, there's consequences. So
and I think this is a movie too where we're really starting to see these two big stars, both have a type, a role, right? There's they're sort of typecast.
Oh, yeah. You know,
Eastwood has his thing, but these are two greats that we've grown up with. And in this film, they're both aging and coming to terms with their mortality. And I think I remember this is a film going, wow, Clint Eastwood's getting old.
Yeah.
You know? And like, wow, that's tough. Because, you know, we grew up with him in the spaghetti westerns and The Man with No Name.
Yeah, the 60s.
And all the Dirty Harry 70s. Movies and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I'll bet, I didn't look into it too much, but I bet based on what we talked about, Gene Hackman's working style, that he probably really enjoyed working with Clint Eastwood, because Clint Eastwood as a director is very, one take. That's it. Right. Move on.
Yeah.
You know,
do your job. Yeah.
Do your job.
Yep. I'm not here to coddle you.
Nope.
Yeah.
Here's the camera setup. Let's go.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that.
Yeah. And Morgan Freeman was in that.
Yeah.
Playing
great job,
Clint Eastwood's sidekick. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Okay. Oh, yay. Some of my favorites. Next, we have in 1993, he was a major supporting role in The Firm that started Tom Cruise, based on a very popular novel. He plays Avery Toller, a charming senior partner who mentors a young lawyer, played by Tom Cruise, in a prestigious firm hiding deadly secrets.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. I've watched The Firm 25 times. I loved the book. And so I thought it was a great adaptation. And I, you know, really loved Tom Cruise in this. But again, you know, Avery Toller, it's so Gene Hackman to come in and just be like the man who's been around the block. He's probably broken a few rules. He's okay with that, you know. And so he's, again, that moral ambiguity and, you know, that I'm just attracted to when Gene Hackman does so well. But that was a huge hit, you know, for another
stacked cast, too. Yeah, Hal Holbrook, Wilford Brimley, Holly Hunter, Ed Harris, David Stratham, Gary Busey.
Yep.
I mean, there's some names here.
Oh, my God. And they're all fantastic. Yeah. It's a really, really, really great film. For sure. And he does, I think, Brian and I, I was talking to you about the rom-com stuff, but I think that's one of the closer-ish that we get, where Gene Hackman plays a little bit of, a romantic interest. He does develop a crush on Tom Cruise's wife, and where does that go, and so forth.
He's lonely.
He's lonely, and there's flirting involved, and they might have even kissed, which you don't see Gene Hackman do much at all. The Firm is one of my favorites. And so is Crimson Tide.
Yes, it's going to happen.
Yes. 1995 is when it came out, and he was co-lead with the great Denzel Washington. Gene Hackman plays Captain Frank Ramsey. He is a hardline submarine commander who clashes with his executive officer, Denzel Washington, over launching nuclear missiles during a crisis. And, David, I think you said, put Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman together in a small tube underwater. It ain't going to be boring, you know?
Right, so, no.
That's right.
Not at all.
You know, again, based on an extremely popular novel. So that did really, really well. And it's also one of my personal favorites because I come from the world of communication, and it really wrestles with, did you or did you not get that note or message? And, what's implied there. So I love the premise of the movie as well. But you can't not watch Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman together. It's a great, great paced, great thriller. It's a terrific movie.
Yeah, and then we have a lovely insider Hollywood movie, Get Shorty, from 1995.
Yes. So he plays supporting role Harry Zim, a nervous B-movie producer, gets in over his head when a loan shark decides Hollywood is his next racket. And John Travolta, of course, plays the loan shark. And the two of them are just so good together.
And Delroy Lindo is in this, and Dennis Farina. So Rene Russo. Yeah.
Rene Russo plays. Yeah. Yep.
So fun one.
It's a fun one. Absolutely.
Yeah. I did not like the second one, but that's neither here nor there. But Get Shorty is a classic. It's iconic.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Finally, we have Enemy of the State, 1998. Yes. Edward Brill Lyle, a reclusive surveillance expert, aids a lawyer framed by a rogue NSA agent.
Yeah. Talk about the deep state. This is all about like good guys and bad guys within the government. So yeah. I saw it not too long ago. Hmm. And it, you know, as a ridiculous action movie, it holds up, but it's in league with like James Bond and, you know, all sorts of gadgets and just sort of like stuff that just not would ever happen. Right. It's not real at all, but it is a fun thriller. It is for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So I guess we're going into the 2000s now.
We are.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. So we start in the year 2000 with a film called Under Suspicion.
Okay.
Directed by Stephen Hopkins. Hackman plays, he's a co-lead with Morgan Freeman, I believe. And he plays Henry. Freeman. Another Freeman, yeah.
Well, they've been in a couple movies mm-hmm. together, mm-hmm. so.
Yep. Yeah. So here Hackman plays Henry Hurst, and he is a wealthy lawyer who becomes the prime suspect in a murder case during an intense police interrogation. So again, I haven't rewatched it in quite a while, but you know, it's definitely, again, one of those morally ambiguous characters for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
And
what's
then,
next?
Also we that got, same year, 2000. Yeah. Go ahead, Bri.
We got The Replacements. He plays a supporting role. Coach Jimmy McGinty, a grizzly coach, leads a team of misfit replacement players.
Oh, no, another misfit team.
I know. Yeah. I'm thinking I might, you know, he's thinking becoming a writer maybe, and he needs some money.
Okay. So he takes his role.
Yeah, right. We call those, Robert De Niro calls them the IRS movies so that he can pay his taxes. And that's why he does so much work.
There that's you go. Funny. Bingo. Yeah. I remember seeing it when it came out or maybe in rental, like on DVD, but I don't remember much about it. And then in 2001, we have The Heist.
So
he plays a lead. Yeah, Joe Moore. Aging thief is forced into one last dangerous robbery by his treacherous fence. Yeah.
This has got Delroy Lindo in it as well. And I know David Mamet, we have to blow the foghorn when we hear his name, but you know, Mamet's done bad things, right? Didn't he get called out for being
oh my God. See, now you're going to make me go down that rabbit hole, which
It's been a while.
Yeah, I think Mamet's got some issues.
I think so too.
But anyway, nobody writes dialogue like David Mamet. And when you get Danny DeVito and Delroy Lindo and Gene Hackman and Sam Rockwell and Ricky Jay, and it's this, if you like heist movies, if anybody out there in the listening likes a heist movie, this is a great heist movie. It's a lot of fun. And again, you know, actors who we've grown up with, and as they're facing the mortality, and when they take on roles that fit their age, their character, they're mirroring that. So Hackman's role in this is really good. And Sam Rockwell is such a freak in this movie.
Oh my God,
such a weirdo.
Yeah.
So. When is he not, Sam Rockwell?
Right, yes.
But definitely. No, David Mamet is really known as a playwright. He won the Tony and Pulitzer Prize for writing Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yep.
And I wanted to see Al Pacino, and so I went to Broadway to see Al Pacino and Glengarry Glen Ross. So, you know, it all just ties together.
Yep. Yes. Another really good one of Mamet's segue is House of Games, which came out in 1987.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Mm-hmm.
With Joe Mantegna. And, it's a really good movie. Cool. I have a memory that it's a good movie. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
May not be based in any factual observation.
That's
okay.
Right.
So we really only have two more films on his essential list. In 2001, in The Royal Tenenbaums, directed by Wes Anderson, another huge cast, where he does play the lead as the father, the patriarch of this family. So he's Royal Tenenbaum. He's a selfish, estranged patriarch who fakes illness to reinsert himself into the lives of his gifted but damaged children.
Yeah, and this is a classic.
Classic.
Yeah.
I rewatched it. It 100% holds up.
It does. I've seen it too.
It is so funny, you know,
quirky.
God forbid.
So quirky.
So quirky. you know, just lovable, but you're like, dude, you know.
Yeah. You're cruel.
Yeah.
What are you saying that? Sorry.
And I can imagine it was tough, especially with, you know, I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. And I can imagine as Wes Anderson is starting his career, he's very quirky, definitely very precise, mm-hmm. you know, and tight and clean with his shots. And so yeah. I'm not surprised that Wes Anderson was probably trying to figure himself out as a director with this, you know, and so that's probably why there was a little bit of a clashing on set. And good old Bill Murray.
This is early in his career. Yeah. This is right after Rushmore, which really broke.
Yeah. Which really brought him. Yeah. Which really brought
Wes Anderson out.
Yeah. And I was reading too that Hackman himself had struggled with this role. He didn't get the character, apparently. Yeah.
I can see it. I think that, oddly enough, I think that
played into how he played
exactly.
it very
that,
well.
That discomfort, that internal discomfort came, you know, like, who am I? I'm not comfortable in my own skin.
Yeah.
Yes.
That, that plays out in Tannenbaum's character himself.
So. Yes.
Yeah, I think Angelica Houston really talked to me about that one. So, and then we finish in 2003 on our essential list, Runaway Jury. He plays a key supporting role as Rankin Fitch, a ruthless jury consultant who manipulates a gun industry trial until a mysterious juror turns the tables.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. And
Cusack. Oh.
Yeah. John Cusack. Hoffman again. And Dustin Hoffman plays, you know, he's on the good side, you know, fighting for the family that whose husband was killed by death by gunshot. There was a raid, a shooter went in, I think it was like a stockbroker or an office or something, and he shot a whole bunch of people down. And so one of them, the wife decided, we can't keep doing this. And so, yeah, so it's very much Gene Hoffman and Dustin, or Gene Hoffman.
Gene Hoffman, nice one.
You're together now. Podcast there running. We go. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But yeah, I mean, he's just Rankin, just no, zero morals here. But it is one of my favorite movies because, again, for me, great book. And
that's right.
If you don't know the book and you go into the movie, for me, it's one of my favorite plot twists, like ever in movies. So it's very entertaining to watch.
So quick note about your essentials list. You guys came up with this list. Mm-hmm. What was sort of your criteria or rubric for what you picked on this list?
Because
there's a lot of missing movies off here, obviously, not only from the complete filmography, but like I'm not seeing Superman on here or, you know, some other
things. Right, as Lex Luthor, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really based on an algorithm of, again, since he passed and so much was written about him last year, it was based on a general consensus, you know, that I use. To start out with artificial intelligence that scraped the internet and said, this is, you know, this is a movie or a role that is on, you know, hundreds of top 10 lists, you know, whether it's on Letterboxd or, you know, actual film critics and so forth. And so it put those two together. And so I let AI do my research there. So, but again, that's why it's 79 films.
And then you guys then boiled that list down and reviewed
and
it yourself.
And said,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Now that I've rewatched Superman and Superman 2, I probably should have put that one on his list.
Got it. Okay. Well, learning curve.
For learning. Yeah. For exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's right. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, so, here's part of the exactly. Yeah. So here's the part of the podcast where we pick our films.
Yes.
And do we just want to do a list of 10 and each pick one so that then we have a voting of three? I know on the 11Zs podcast, we pick 11 and we have a random dice roll that picks one movie. We can do whatever we want. We can change it in future. So what do you guys think?
Oh my God, one of my favorites. I really did flop at this list, Brian. I didn't put Birdcage on here.
Yeah, I know, right. Well, it's not too late.
Well, they can yell at you on everybody on the internet can now yell at
you. You can at me.
So. Yeah.
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 For sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can at Lisa for that one.
Yeah. So.
Well,
I mean, I have a favorite and it's probably.
Okay.
You know, so I'm not quite sure how to
call it out. What is what are you picking for?
What sticks with me is going to be The Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
Probably, but. I'm a Wes Anderson freak, And I love that quirky stuff.
Two great tastes here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So I love
Brian,
them in that one.
Do you
one.
Have a thought?
I think, you know, I think from what I would say, you know, my third, it's tough. I have like my three.
It's not supposed to be easy.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Out of 79 members. I'm not going to put Hoosiers down as my pick. So I'm deciding between Mississippi Burning and The Unforgiven. I think we'll do The Unforgiven.
Okay.
I'm going to put that on the list because it's just a great, you know, another great example of this moral murkiness that Hickman, that he's thrilled for. Yeah.
Okay. And I think I am going to go with The Conversation.
Mm. Excellent.
Early from his 1974. It's one that I've been wanting to see. And when you go on the internet and you search for Hackman stuff, this movie just kept coming up and up and up and up. And I was, and we didn't talk about it before. And I did watch a couple of his other movies, but I did not watch this one. And I kind of regret not watching it for that round. So I think that's the one I'm most interested in. Because it's supposed to be where his character, as an actor, he really breaks open with this character in some interesting ways. But Lisa, you just saw it recently, so
yes, absolutely. He's not, he's having a nervous breakdown almost, and so to have him really struggle what he fears he has caused, and you know the interest in him in the recording that he got. For a client, he's facing pressure from all kinds of angles, and you know.
Okay, well, say no more. Exactly. Don't ruin the movie for everybody.
yeah. We can thank The Godfather Part Two for that. So
right.
Yeah.
So we'll get these. Put these into. We use a platform called Straw Poll, so we'll get a list. Peter OH has been helping us with. Doing our polls a little bit. I'll see if he's available. If not, I'll put it together. We'll throw it up there. We'll leave the voting open for a couple of weeks. And then when we get a result, we will take that movie. We will watch it. We will deep dive on it and record a podcast and then be back at you when that is all ready to roll out. Anything else that you guys want to cover tonight or say? I'm really looking forward to that. I think this will be a fun... it's a sad topic, but I think it's an angle that maybe not a lot of other film review podcasts are taking. And I like this idea of, you know, combing over people's filmographies and then really thinking about it, considering and discussing their body of work.
There's a lot of, you know, lot is usually written about when a legacy like this passes away. But you're right. A lot of the podcasts that I listen to regularly, I mean, they're not going to devote a whole show, to this. It will absolutely be mentioned and the co-host will share their, memories of favorite film or whatever, but it's just incorporated into a full episode. So
I
like being able to do what lorehounds do.
Exactly.
That's right. And it's a celebration, not necessarily as...
Yeah.
A sad.
Right. And a remembrance.
Yeah. That's right.
So I think we'll wrap it up there again. Yeah. Into the West at thelorehounds.com. Join us on our Discord server if you want to chat in real time or, you know, give us feedback, but definitely send in your comments, your remembrances, your suggestions. If you want to at Lisa for not including a film on an essentials list,
yes.
Go for it.
Yep.
And then we'll be back in a couple, two, three weeks with our review of whatever movie won the poll. And then that link for that will be in the show notes of this, and then we'll put it on the Discord as well. We always like to do for our podcasts, we are a independent podcast, and subscribers are sort of the heart and soul, the blood circulating through our veins on this podcast. So we always like to give a shout out to everyone at the end of every podcast. on our Discord. We have a number of people who pay Discord a little bit of money, and then they can donate a couple of bits. And then it helps boost our server. All the kids these days, all this language use.
Yep. Rowan.
And Greta. So yeah. Aaron K. Tiller, The Thriller, Doof71, Athena, Agilea, Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Perdition, Radioactive Richard, and Audrion all donate their bits to our server to make it a more interactive community space. And so we really appreciate that. And then our lore masters, who are our top tier subscribers, are Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., SC, Peter OH, Nancy M., Doof71, Brian8063.
Hello.
Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Andra B., Kwong Yu, Nathan T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dali V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Lestu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Il Mariel, Paul K., Rocky Zim, Jessica A., Red Zippy, TCS, Dopamini, Catch It, LNR, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W., Cassie K., Chumbaruni, Katilla, Josh Liu, Paint and PDX, Corey G., Quinch, and forever last but never least, Audrion. These are all of our top tier subscribers, and their dollars really sort of leverage us over the hump of being able to pay for all this stuff and make it sort of worth our while. We put an insane amount of work into all of these podcasts because we love what we do. And your community support really lets us know that we're doing something that y'all like. So thank you all very much. Lisa, Brian, this is a great first podcast out of the gate. I mean, it's not the first podcast, but right. It's the first one under the name. Yeah.
Under
but
the name, right. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. We've been doing it. So I look forward to taking the show and evolving it with you and as we go. But I think we've got a really good start. So everybody chime in, let us know your thoughts, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.